Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN. Good morning. How can you raise money for an animal shelter? Sell jewelry. We'll talk to Graziella Kaufman, who's been doing very successfully just that. And a very exciting announcement about a book called Decoding Your Cat. Remember a couple of years ago, I co-edited a book called Decoding Your Dog. I wrote the introduction or foreword to that book. Well, I did write the foreword to this book, Decoding Your Cat. Most importantly, authored by members of the American College of Veterinary Behaviorists, here to help your cats. Dr. Heather Lenzer is the Senior Veterinary Officer of the American Animal Hospital Association, as well as one of my favorite dance partners on the radio. Hello, Dr. Lenzer.
Hi, Steve. You're a great dance partner, too.
Well, you know, you and I have talked many times, and we've talked before about at this time of year, they call them weekend warriors, I suppose, dogs that aren't necessarily in great shape coming out of the winter in an area like Chicago. But, you know, some of the dogs are in great shape because they've been doing nothing. You know, there's that cartoon, and there are several like it, you know, where the guy comes with a leash in hand, and the dog is like cowering under a table and says, "Not another walk. We've had 28 today."
Exactly. Exactly.
You know, so some dogs are in pretty good shape at this time of year when there may not typically be, but others might not be. So are there concerns you have about doing too much too soon, potentially, with some of our dogs?
Definitely. And I'm going to bucket in the one group that I find that I'm most concerned about. I'm going to lump them all together into one bucket, and that is the dogs with squishy faces, like or brachycephalic dogs. So mm-hmm. These are bulldogs, pugs, Boston Terriers. They all have the same amount of soft tissue in their mouth that a lab has or a golden retriever, only it's smushed, right, because they don't have a long nose. What that means is that these dogs can't cool down very well. And so if they go out on a jog or a long walk on even a 60 or 70 degree day, these dogs can't blow off the heat that is accumulating inside them, because dogs don't sweat to the same degree that people do. They rely on this, on panting to cool down. So any dogs that have very short noses, they really can't always control their body temperature. And I see a lot of heat stroke in the early summer because these dogs have gone outside and the owners are all excited to get out there and enjoy the nice weather. And initially the dog is too, and then they start to get overheated.
Well, so, I want to talk about some of the signs of overheating before it actually begins to get to the point where they have to see you. I mean, I've seen, even just driving around town over the years, I've seen bulldogs just stop in their tracks, almost collapse. Do sometimes we forget that 60 degrees to us is like about 105 degrees in a sense to a bulldog, because they're so inefficient at keeping cool. And not only bulldogs, but other of those dogs that look like they just walked into a wall, the brachycephalic breeds.
Right. No, that's exactly right. So astute pet owners can pick up on signs of distress much earlier than people that are maybe multitasking or are their focus isn't taking the dog for a walk. So some of the subtle signs that we see are a dog just starting to slow down a little bit on the walk, or lingering to be extra curious around the base of a tree or a fire hydrant. Sometimes they'll just stop and just sort of stubbornly refuse to move forward. They are trying to tell us something. They're not necessarily trying to be defiant. When it starts to get towards the stages where most pet owners will realize they're in trouble, it's when the dog is now panting excessively. And I use the tongue, the direction of the tongue as an indicator. So if they are panting and their tongue is coming straight out of their mouth and kind of lolling down like a slide, that is relatively normal panting. But when it goes off to the side, it's kind of drooping off to the left or the right, they're starting to get in distress. They'll start to have a lot of, instead of watery drool, it becomes very viscous or ropey, and that's a sign that they're dehydrating. And then some will just collapse and be unable to move. And the biggest problem I see is at this point, people realize that they are overheated, and they try to cool the dog down too quickly. So it's important to not to fight your instincts. And a lot of people will try to, you know, throw the dog in a lake or dump cold water from the cooler over top of them.
Mm-hmm.
When they're cooled down too rapidly, they actually can go into have serious clotting problems and go into shock and something called disseminated intravascular coagulation, which is a very life-threatening situation.
Yeah, yeah. You know, you said something brilliant. And but you do that frequently. But this is a pet peeve of mine. It truly is. You said when people are paying attention. So I see person after person after person after person walking their dog, but I don't even know if they know they have a dog there because they're paying attention solely to their telephone. And it drives me crazy because the best thing about, and in fact, a study was done in some Scandinavian country, I don't remember where, but I do remember the study. The most enriching thing that you can do with a dog is actually simply going for a walk, but you have to be there. You have to literally not only physically be there, but be there with the dog. And it seems there is communication somehow from one end of the leash to the other. And we get into trouble when we're not paying attention, not only because we might miss something like heat stroke, but we can miss any number of other things that are going on. And really, then you're not there with the dog.
Isn't it interesting how we have to keep being reminded to stay present? You know, I mean, we have to, as a parent, we're reminded of that, and as a friend, but you're completely right about walking our dogs and staying present then. I mean, even just the simple thing of, you know, when the dog gets his foot caught over the leash so that now the leash is just in a really uncomfortable position. The dog sort of running up, you know, three-legged behind you. I see that a lot, and people just aren't realizing that their dog is uncomfortable. And then you just get into the issues with if you're not reading your dog well, you're probably not reading somebody else's dog well, and you could end up getting into a dog fight, you know, two leashed dogs fighting.
Yeah.
And that has a lot of dire consequences for everyone involved.
Of course, of course. You know, I can't believe I'm about to ask you this question. Who would have ever thought? You know, I often have talked to you because you work in an emergency room. Emergency medicine is one of your things, so we often talk about that. But what I never would have thought that I'd ever talk to you about isn't only safety for our dogs, but safety for ourselves when we go out. And it's kind of like, you know, your dog sees another dog, the dog wants to say hello, but you have to be 6 feet away.
Right. Right. No, we do. And to be quite honest, Steve, I'm not a big fan of even having our dog say hello in regular circumstances. I just think there's too many missed clues that dog owners on either end of either leash of either dog can miss and end up having a fight. But you're completely right, especially in this day and age, we do need to stay apart from each other right now. And the last thing we want to do is all be tangled up together in a mass of fur and saliva and leashes all on the ground trying to wrestle our dogs off of each other. So I know I'm not letting my dog sniff on the other dogs right now because I'm trying to avoid any unnecessary trips to the ER for either myself or my dog.
Yeah, yeah. Rats. I don't want to forget to ask you this. And it has to do with rats. So Chicago and New York and New Orleans, and other cities around the country have reported because the restaurants are either closed or slowly starting to open, depending on where you are, that rats cannot dumpster dive at 3 a.m. anymore. And they've changed their schedules. They're out during the day more often. So what if a dog, usually a terrier, encounters a rat or rat poisoning that's meant for the rats? Tell me about it.
Well, I'm more worried about the rat poison, frankly. And there's multiple different kinds of rat poison, but they are designed to kill a mammal, and your dog is a mammal too, obviously. So, and even wildlife and wild birds, raptors and hawks can get affected by eating an animal that has ingested rat poison.
Yeah.
So you can have blood clotting problems, you can have brain swelling problems, and you can have kidney failure problems, all which are horrible. So if your dog comes in contact with rat poison and eats it, it's best to find out exactly what kind it was, because it's not all the same kind. It doesn't all kill the rat in the same way. And that will help the veterinarian understand what antidote or what supportive treatment that the dog needs. So but if you keep your dog on the leash, you're less likely to run into a rat poison situation.
Well, and very quickly, because we're almost out of time here, but is it all about, if I suggested, well, this could happen or that could happen or this could happen, is it really all about prevention, which means supervision?
I think it really does. Supervision, and as you brought up, like being present in the supervision, it's not just being a dead weight at the other end of the leash. It's really reading the situation, reading people. And we're doing a lot of the reading people right now because we're trying to figure out, is that person sick? Are they not sick? How am I feeling?
Yeah.
How far away am I from that person? And so it's just keep your antenna up. You know, enjoy being outside. Enjoy being at a safe distance with your fellow man and your fellow dogs. But do be careful and do stay alert.
And your fellow woman.
And your fellow women.
Dr. Heather Lenzer, as always, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Graziella Kaufman was brought to my attention by my wife, Robin, actually, who is in general a fan of not only animal shelters, but jewelry. And it turns out Graziella makes jewelry and is a famous, very, very, very famous. I mean, your jewelry is purchased by the stars, by people in Hollywood. Graziella, welcome to the show.
Hi, Steve. Nice to have me. How are you?
I'm great. I'm not only here talking about jewelry. That's not my show. But we'll talk about the connection with an animal shelter in a second. But talk about what you do, first off.
Yes, so I've been making jewelry for over 20 years. My grandfather was a jeweler from Italy, and so it's really my blood. I am from Brazil, and as you probably can hear on the accent, and I grew up with the passion for gemstones and jewelry. Brazil being like the largest, you know, producer of gemstones in the world, it's kind of like I grew up with a geological treasure in my backyard. It was incredible. And so, you know, I started very small and just making jewelry and selling to friends, and it kept growing. And about, 10 years ago, I started my company, Graziella, which is Graziella Gems. And it exploded. It's really been a great, great ride.
So how did you hook up with MCP? MCP, those are the three letters.
Mission Compassion Paw, MCP,
yeah.
Yes. So I know Marta Kennard for many, many years from rescue. We've both been in other places and helping other rescues. And it's really our love of animals that brought us together. And Marta started MCP a couple of years ago, and she is just, oh my God, she is, it's not just about being an animal lover, she is really an animal whisperer. She lives for that. It's her mission in life. And so for me, I'm so proud to be the VP of MCP. It's a new rescue, so a lot of people don't know about it, especially where I live up north. But I mean, I feel in the city, it's like, everywhere. It's exploded. I mean, we do a work that we take really the unwanted, the animals that are, difficult cases. Of course, we also take the fluffies because nobody can resist the fluffies. But, we take those cases that are very complicated. They need surgery or they need, like just a home where they're going to feel safe and they're going to blossom and, be the beautiful animal that they have. But at first they are a little afraid. And so people don't understand that. So it's really a labor of love.
It is
beautiful.
What you've said is that, okay, if you purchase my jewelry, I'm going to give money, and money is needed because of everything you just mentioned. I'm going to give money to MCP. Do you have any idea how much money you've raised yourself? Because your jewelry It's hot right now. You're selling jewelry all over the place.
Oh, thank you so much, Steve. So what I've always done is I gave, since the beginning of the company, I give about 10% of the revenues to different animal shelters. MCP, of course, is my focus, you know, because I'm the VP of MCP, but I love all animals. I love donkeys. I love, like, goats. It's like, you know, everywhere. And I launched this collection called the Positivity Collection with cats and dogs and horses. And I mean, this collection, I'm giving 30% off to, like, off the sale price, not just the revenues. So it's amazing. So that goes directly to MCP. Now, this collection in particular, because the jewelry I make is fine jewelry, I'm making also in silver with gold plated. So, you know, it's much more affordable and it can reach many more people. I partner with that also with like amazing animal lover celebrities like Olivia Munn and her pet shelter project, and Marley's Mutts with Kaylee Coco, Nikki Reed with Long Hope's donkey. It's a donkey rescue. It's unbelievable.
Well, I knew at some point we'd be talking about Hollywood. Graziella, very quickly, what's your website?
Oh, graziellagems.com. And the Positivity Collection is right up there, right up front.
Right up front. Graziella, thank you so much for everything you're doing for Chicago and for animals. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Steve.
This is going to be the most exciting interview ever because I have an announcement to make that actually it just thrills me because I was involved in this book. It was partially my idea called Decoding Your Dog, a book that did so incredibly well. Thank you, all of you, for buying that book, which is still available, that describes dog behaviors based on science. And it was put together by the American College of Veterinary Behaviorists, which is what I like best about it. The book did well. Are you ready for the announcement? Now there will be Decoding Your Cat. And I have sitting right here Dr. Megan Herron, who is co-editor of that book. Why did you guys decide at the American College of Veterinary Behaviorists? And I'm glad you did. We need to do a book about cats, too.
Yeah. Well, to be honest, Steve, I think from its inception, we had the idea of doing both. But we started with dogs, and it was successful beyond expectations, really. It sold over 30,000 copies, which is
so far.
Yep. Again, that was the last statistic over a year ago. So you're right. It's probably much higher. So for a book on dog behavior is extraordinary. And so we got together, and my co-editors, Dr. Debbie Horowitz and Dr. Carlo Siracusa, had the privilege of being editors for this book, and we've put together a team of authors who are all veterinary behaviorists, so board certified veterinary behaviorists, coming together. Most chapters have two great minds working together to provide scientifically sound and practical. That's what's great about it. It's not just science we're talking about, but it's practical. And we talk about not just, you know, how to understand and read your cat, but how to live with and love your cat and let them flourish and really explore what is normal and natural for them and how we can handle and deal with behaviors that are normal but problematic, but also how to recognize early signs that there's a problem, how to look at signs of illness. Again, we're veterinarians, so first and foremost, we're able to recognize when there's a medical reason for some of these behavioral changes.
Lots of questions to ask out of all that. So first of all, you said veterinary behaviorist. I said that too. What is a veterinary behaviorist?
Great question, Steve. Because really anyone can call themselves a behaviorist.
Well, that's
if they
part of the problem. I mean, that was part of the reason why I wanted to do Decoding Your Dog, because when it comes to animal behavior, I'm a certified animal behavior consultant, but I learn all the time. I do mean all the time.
As we all
from
do.
Well, yes, but from veterinary behaviorists specifically. Mm-hmm. And at that mountain, at the very top of the mountain, to me, it's the veterinary behaviorist. But yes, anyone and everyone is calling themselves a behaviorist.
Right.
And with cats, it's even crazier. So there are people that call themselves behaviorists that literally, I met someone like this, who reads tea leaves about cats.
Education Via degree by tea. There you go.
Yes. I don't know what kind of.
That's a new one for me.
I don't know if it was black tea or if it was oolong or jasmine. I don't know.
Right.
But
you're right.
But you are a scientist.
Right. And the general public is really at a loss because there's no guidance for them. You can Google things and anybody can call themselves an expert and write a blog or website or book on behavior and actually have no accreditation, no education, no certification in the slightest. And so what we really want to do is offer our cat families scientifically sound advice, both medical and behaviorally, on what is normal for cats and what's true about their behavior. There is so much myth out there about cats, and we hope to dismiss that myth, debunk some of these common misconceptions about cats and cat behavior, with the ultimate goal of keeping them in their homes and flourishing in their forever families. I mean, cats are unfortunately relinquished to shelters every day, and lot of those are for behavior problems.
That's exactly
some of which are normal problems.
You're going exactly
normal behaviors, right?
But that's sad. Mm-hmm. So the number one, and when I talk to on the radio or when I make an appearance at a shelter or occasionally a cat show wherever I happen to be, and I'm talking about cats, and I say, do you know what the number one cause of death in cats? People, cancer, kidney disease. Well, all those things are significant for sure, but it's actually behavior.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's what I call, and you kind of put it this way too, perceived bad behavior is the way I say
it. Yeah, so they're normal behaviors, but they're undesirable behaviors. So they're a nuisance to the families with whom they're living.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and some of that comes back to domestication, right? We look at dogs and what we've changed from their ancestor to what they are now. The domesticated dog is quite different from their wild ancestor. If you look at a picture of today's domestic cat and their wild ancestor, you really can't tell a lot of difference. And so if physically they haven't changed a whole lot, it probably means their behavioral repertoire is fairly similar as well. And that's going to include a very strong hunting instinct, a desire to scratch and chew and be very destructive, to climb all over things, to perch, to feel safe. And a lot of those can be problematic for family.
You can pre-order your copy of Decoding Your Cat on Amazon right now. You won't believe what a dog's nose can do. We're still learning, and we learned something else, which I'll tell you about next. Again, I was so honored to be a part of that book, Decoding Your Cat. You can pre-order it on Amazon, and we'll talk more about that in the upcoming weeks and months and years and decades. And boy, oh boy, what a dog's nose can do! But who knew a dog had this in common with vampire bats? Both vampire bats and dogs can heat sense. They can, quote, smell heat. And what is this, the purpose of all this? So researchers figured it out, but what's the point? Well, in theory, your dog could take your temperature. Dogs might be doing that right now. You know, ask any obstetrician. They will tell you that they have learned that this person is pregnant because their dog had been sniffing intently at that place. Why is the dog sniffing intently at the belly? Well, probably we've assumed it's all sense of smell, that the dog can smell hormone changes in her and maybe can even smell the baby. We don't know. But it might be heat that they're sensing as well. It's called the rhinarium of their nose. It's the part that you see that we say is the wet dog nose. And that's how dogs are able to heat sense. And it's been suggested that dogs, you know, you walk inside the building and there'll be a dog there to take your temperature to determine for COVID-19. Well, I don't think that's very realistic. So I think this is fascinating. I do. And I think it's good information. I think that one day we will figure out how to utilize this ability that dogs have that we didn't even know they have until now. But no, they're not going to be taking our temperatures. I mean, will dogs be able to distinguish between a temperature of 98.6 or whatever the new normal is to 102 or something that's only a couple degrees difference? I don't think so. And beside, what's wrong with a thermometer? And you don't have to feed a thermometer. So I really don't think in the real world we'll be using dogs for that purpose anytime soon. We'll see you next week for sure on Steve Dale's Pet World.